Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Elijah Campbell and Max Herz here with you on this Friday morning, this Christmas Eve morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's enjoying themselves this morning. We're going to go out here in just a few minutes to St. Thomas Sports Park. Mike Vrabel addressing the media after a 20-17 win last night for the Tennessee Titans against the San Francisco 49ers. The Titans improved to 10-5, and Elijah, as we talked about, essentially, I think, wrapped up the AFC South last night. We'll see if they get some help. All but wrapped it up last night with the win. A.J. Brown, a huge game last night, especially in the second half for the Titans. He takes over 11 catches, 145 yards, one touchdown on 16. Count them, 16 targets last night for A.J. Brown. Ryan Tannehill finishing 22 of 29 for 209 yards and a touchdown in that game. A big run at the end of the game as well for a 23-yarder. And then my guy, Randy Bullock, capping it off to end that game. What a kick by Randy last night. A 44-yarder, and the Titans get it done 20-17. Some big plays defensively as well. He ended up sacking Jimmy Garoppolo a couple of times, and two interceptions, one by Janoris Jenkins, the other by Amani Hooker in that game. And tried to give you a third. Rashawn Evans probably kicking himself on that one.
Yeah, that's why he's not on offense. But yeah. Rumor has it, going back to the Randy Bullock kick here, which needs all the pub in the world, rumor has it there was a Randy chant at Nissan Stadium last night.
Max, I was chanting Randy.
Yeah, why wouldn't they be?
Oh, man. That's the fact that a kicker is getting chants in an NFL game. Brings a smile to my face.
Especially with this franchise.
And Christmas joy and warmth to my heart to know that after the kicker discourse we had in this city for a couple months during training camp, it's nice. It's a relief.
Let's head out to St. Thomas Sports Park and catch up with Titans head coach Mike Vrabel.
With their families. I think that's important. They put a lot into this, and had some long nights the last few days, so I think it's important that they get away and try to spend some time with their families.
Jim White.
Good morning, Mike. How were you able to limit George Kittle to just two catches, and how big of a key to the game you think that was?
Well, it was a huge key. I mean, he's a fantastic player. You know, we mixed some coverages in on him. I think the guys that were responsible for him and man did a nice job, but they also, you know, they were having some success with some screens, you know, early. So I don't know how much that they needed him. You know, he had a play down there in the red zone or kind of in the fringe that, you know, we should have been tighter on, needed to be tighter on, but a lot of different ways. I think the way that the game went, Dane played well against them on third down. You know, some of those things.
Terrell?
Yeah, Coach, as far as Raiders is concerned, can you just kind of get into a little bit, you know, how proud you are of the way he was able to step in, especially going against a guy like Bosa?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dylan was excited for the opportunity. He's continued to improve. He's continued to prepare. We talk about it all the time that you want to be ready for your opportunity. It wasn't perfect, but he battled and really competed. And it was, again, just a special feeling to watch him, you know, come up that tunnel and just be excited about doing some things that help us win.
Paul?
Hey, Mike, I thought in the spirit of Christmas, perhaps you'd be willing to offer some small nugget on Derrick Henry's progress.
Yeah, still rehabbing, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
David Buckler.
Mike, how well did Buster Screen handle flip-flopping between outside and base, inside and the nickel, and what sort of made that the right decision for last night?
Are you questioning the decision, David? I'm curious here.
I'm just kind of curious what went into the decision to, you know, when you had Jackrabbit back, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think that those are things that we have to weigh. You know, Rabbit had been out for a while. and wanted to see how he, you know, handled some of the reps and the way that he was coming back and, you know, his return to play and, you know, what we thought like was best for the team. Buster's done nothing but try to help us and playing inside and playing outside. And, you know, Elijah was down. So, you know, we kind of needed Buster to fill in a few different roles. And, but, you know, there's just a lot of moving parts sometimes when you get in there and, you know, working some guys back. So hopefully, you know, Rabbit will have responded well to the action that he had last night. And then we'll get him, and we'll get him going here, and hopefully he feels better, as well as Chris Jackson, as we move forward into next week.
Ben?
Hey, Mike. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, Ben. Merry Christmas to you too, buddy.
Thank you. Just two games with Zach Cunningham. How would you kind of assess what he's brought to you guys and just how he's sort of integrated himself with your defense?
Yeah, I think that Zach, everything that I've seen, he in the building and walking around, and, you know, excited to be here, excited, you know, trying to learn his teammates, learn the defense. You know, it's not an easy task to go and have learned a new defense where he was, with terminology and adjustments, and then coming here and learning another defense with more terminology and different adjustments. And he's put a lot of work in. He's made some nice plays for us. He's tried to play physical for us, and hopefully we can continue to progress with him and the rest of the linebackers.
Emily?
Yeah, Coach, just with how many times, you know, your team has turned the ball over the last couple of weeks to have a
Uh-oh, like we got sniped there.
We'll the radio fairy is undefeated.
We'll try to get connected back with the Mike Vrabel press conference here in just a few minutes. By the way, Mike Vrabel's press conference is sponsored by Tire Man. Tire Man for all your company tire needs, construction equipment, or fleet maintenance. Call 615-663-6040. Sniped. The Sniper Man's undefeated, man.
Undefeated.
By the way, shout out to Paul Kaharski. For
care of the football.
There we are.
You know, we're always going to continue to coach it when it is loose, and you know, whether, you know, showing them the opportunities that the defenders are coming from behind and trying to hammer it out of there. But it is certainly a huge you know, positive for us to be able to go and play against a very good defense who had caused, you know, a lot of turnovers in the previous weeks, to be able to take care of the football and show our team how that translates to success.
Chris Herr.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, I was just wondering if, you know, there are moments throughout the season that can be pivotal for one way or another. Is this perhaps a galvanizing moment with the way that you guys performed, given everything that has happened over the last couple of weeks? What do you think?
I hope so. You know, I hope so. I think that what will be critical is for us to get some rest, to try to, you know, stay as healthy as we possibly can, you know, try to reemphasize that to the team, you know, that we all, you know, need to be as careful as we can. We come back in here on Monday, make the corrections, and continue to improve here down the stretch. You know, we always talk about you have to be playing your best football late. The teams that do that are the ones that get into the tournament. And we always want to try to be one of those football teams. But I think that this certainly can help us. The nature in which we won it, the grittiness in which it was won with. And so hopefully we can do some of those things and continue to carry that over into next week.
Terrell?
Yeah, with Ryan Tannehill, obviously, I mean, you can't speak for him, but I mean, does it seem like he played with more
confidence? No, I can, Teron. I just won't. I could, but I'm not going to. So
okay. The truth is revealed. I appreciate that. So that being said, do you feel like he played with more confidence, or something like that cockiness that he had with some of the throws, you know, pushing it down the field, squeezing it into tight windows?
Yeah, but we also, you know, protected. You know, I mean, he also wasn't getting hit. every other play, like maybe sometimes before. So, you know, we're all responsible to try to take care of the guy with the football. And we did that. It wasn't perfect. But when given some time, you could see that Ryan was able to deliver the football. We executed, you know, we got him to jump off sides. We executed that play first time since I've been here. And I think that that's really cool to see. And I think that that was a huge play in the football game as well.
Paul?
Mike, you touched on it last night, and AJ said, you know, suffers an upper body injury, and even then he said he couldn't get his heart rate up for 2 weeks. All these injuries, the guys coming back with the conditioning, how much of a challenge has that been for them to be able to contribute when they get back?
Yeah, that's, you know, I think it showed up a little bit. It's with some other guys, Paul, that, you know, you watch the tape and it's really hard to recreate that and try to find that level, especially some of those guys around the line of scrimmage. For anybody that's maybe wrestled and not been in wrestling shape, that when you're kind of working a little different conditioning, you know, where AJ, a receiver, maybe doing some more running, you know, a guy like Tier Tardis is in there and wrestling with different guys and then trying to run to the football. So I think that's where the struggle is try to find ways for these guys around the line of scrimmage to get into football shape that maybe have been out for a few weeks. AJ and maybe a receiver would have the luxury of having more realistic conditioning as they're working their way back. So I think that's the one thing that I'm going to try to target is some of these guys at the line of scrimmage, you know, is how do we focus on their conditioning, which is going to be battling with somebody at the line of scrimmage and then having to go and run to the football.
Thanks.
Jim?
Mike, you kind of touched on Jackrabbit earlier. How big of a play was his pick in the end zone? And do you think that kind of allowed you to settle down? And what did he do right on that play?
Well, I think it starts with, you know, the coaching staff. You know, I walked into the red zone meeting and, you know, a lot of teams like to run those corners, you know, the corner route from inside. San Francisco was somebody that has shown a lot of those seven stops or swirl routes. And so I think that they were prepared. I think the coaches had them prepared to, you know, try to make sure that we weren't on top of those routes and we were sitting on them. And, you know, it was really cool to see Rabbit be able to take the information that he got in the meeting out into the onto the game field and to be able to sit out on that route and not, you know, be too high on it and make a play and be able to catch it. So, and it was a huge play at a huge moment.
Buck?
Hey, Mike. With Dylan and how he was preparing to play swing tackle, I know you haven't played tackle, obviously, but, like, what can he use to translate to make sure that he's able to fill in at any spot at any given point for you guys when you need him?
I think that's a testament to him. You know, the coaching staff is just trying to have some versatility, which – you know, I think we've always thought that Dylan had that versatility to play inside, to play outside. And I think to really improve, you have to be able to maybe target one particular position. I think as a young player, I think that's something that I could relate to. Play, you know, not having played offensive line, but maybe playing different positions early on in my career. So we had been working at guard, and you know, this week we you know needed him to transfer and translate some of that information to playing tackle. So there is some versatility there, and we'll just continue to, you know, and work with Dylan and improve and see where he's at next week.
Looks like we got three more here, Chris.
Yeah, Mike, just curious, the guys who are on the COVID reserve list, are they doing all right?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Chris. I think that's something that's always important is making sure that we stay connected with those individuals. It gets lonely, and but they are doing well. I appreciate you asking.
Paul?
Just one Dylan, Mike, most of the time when you have a guy filling
like that. Is
this like
some cruel joke that on Christmas we're going to let Paul ask three questions? Is that like some like gag gift for me?
Yeah.
Three wishes, yeah.
Go ahead, Paul, sorry.
Most of the time you say when a guy steps in, you know, hey, we fully expected the guy to do his job and next man up and all of that. With Dylan, it seems like, I don't know, a little festival of pride and congratulations and stuff, like it's framed differently, that the second round pick is doing something in week 16 and game 15.
No.
You feel that?
No, I don't. What I feel is a rookie that went out and competed against a very good defense, a very good player, that probably earned a lot of trust from his teammates for having stood in there and competed with the effort in which he did and helped us win a big game. You know, that's I know that seems like very trivial to you, having not done that, but for me, who gets to watch that and coach that, that's a pretty cool thing. And I wish more people had the opportunity to do that. I know that the offensive line coaches and that unit is a tight unit. And again, whoever would have been out there, you know, we would have had the same, you know, reaction for them. Whether that was Kendall Lamb, who probably was waiting for an opportunity that unfortunately didn't get it, would have been the same thing.
Last one, Jimmy.
And Mike, what did you think about AJ's throw? And I mean, did you think he was trying to throw it away?
I just don't think he had very much arm strength. I think that you know, we tried to catch him on a play. You know, I thought we, you know, could have had some of those up, and you know, we didn't hit it. But you know, we'll keep trying to find ways to get everybody involved. And you know, unfortunately, we weren't able to hit that one, and so a little underthrown.
And last one, I know you're going to enjoy your family on Christmas. Will you watch the Colts and, you know, knowing the magnitude of that game, or are you hoping you can take care of your business even if they don't lose?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that – I mean, I'm sure we'll watch the game, right? I mean, we'll watch whatever football games are on, you know, the next couple of days. Yeah, we'll have to – you know, we can't focus on people losing. We got to focus on – you know, us trying to win, and that's the most important thing.
There you go. That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel at his press conference, sponsored by Tire Man. Tire Man, for all your company tire needs, construction equipment, or fleet maintenance, call 615-663-6040. That's 615-663-6040. I don't know if I would describe Vrabel's mood there as festive, but it was funny. Pretty entertaining.
It was prime Mike Vrabel, throwing shots at everybody and not answering questions in relation to Derrick Henry. He kept it on brand.
He did.
And that's all I can ask of him. Like, if it's going to be a holiday, you might as well be your best self. And that's the best self that we get from Mike Vrabel during these press conferences.
Shout out to friend of the show, Paul Kaharsky, for attempting to ask about Derrick Henry and his status. And Vrabel did not bite, said he's rehabbing. There you go.
How about that answer he gave on the Jenkins pick?
That's pretty
like,
good.
Incredible football deep detail.
Yeah.
That's I would love to hear that about every single play in the league.
Yeah. No, it was pretty good. Look, when he wants to, he can get in there and break things down.
And you know he'll only give out info about a team like that they scouted when he knows they will not play that team again.
That is correct.
So, print the headlines right now. Mike Vrabel does not think the 49ers will be the Titans Super Bowl opponent.
I guess
shocker.
So. Great stuff there from Vrabel. We'll come back. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Little Judah and the Lion bringing us back in. Good stuff, Max.
Cookeville High School graduate, Judah Akers.
Really?
Yeah, I was in a Sunday school class.
I was not aware of that.
Back in when I was like the eighth grade.
Really?
He could hoop.
Really?
He wasn't the school's leading scorer, but he was up there. Like, by the time he graduated, he was like in the top two or three leading scorers for high school.
Behind you?
Of course, naturally.
Yeah.
Naturally, even though I came afterwards. But naturally.
Yeah, well,
they already had me up there anyway.
Yeah, you're just preparing for the inevitable.
But yeah, so Jude Akers in a class of Mac Brown and myself as the best Cookeville High School graduates.
That's right.
Mac Brown's about to get a mayo bath next week.
He is.
What a battle that's going to be.
And that will be his crowning career achievement.
They could not have hand-selected a better matchup for that bowl. Give me a little North Carolina, South Carolina action.
And if North Carolina doesn't win by 40, we've got a problem.
The Shanester.
Yeah. His teams will be good in the future, but their team this year against Vandy
was brutal.
Was pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But don't worry, Spencer Rattler's coming in there next year, and by all accounts, all his teammates love him, so that'll be good.
Has there ever been a college football player that had so much Heisman hype before the season, only to not have his job by the time November rolls around?
It's kind of incredible. I was actually thinking about that. I'm sure it's happened, but I can't think of any.
That is some amazing character arc here, and not even at the school. Like, he was supposed to be like a first-round NFL draft pick.
I mean, people were talking about him being number one overall
pick. Like, teams tanking for him, and that fell off a cliff so fast. I just can't remember anybody like having draft stock fall that far, that fast.
Yeah.
I mean, there probably is if I think hard enough, but like in recent memory, that one's pretty remarkable.
It's up there. There's no question about that. We've got some tickets to give away to see War on Drugs at the Ryman coming up on Monday, January 24th. Be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win 2 tickets to see War on Drugs at the Ryman Auditorium coming up on Monday, January 24th. So hit up the phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Blow it up.
615-737-1025. Elijah, anything in particular stand out from you from Vrabel other than his quips back and forth with the media?
The sass is always on 10.
It's always
with Mike Vrabel. But I think the biggest takeaway for me in that, and I like what Max said too about the detailed answer about the Jackrabbit Jenkins interception, where he credits a lot of that to scouting. And what we talked about earlier in the show, was like, that is a good scouting interception right there. Like, you watch the film, you know they're going to go to George Kittle, and you capitalize and you see where you have the advantage, and that's exactly where they did. It was a quintessential Mike Vrabel press conference. You know, outside of the Jackrabbit question, he's not giving you too much. I feel like there is, you know, Paul did mention, he's like, is it different, you know, talking about Dylan Raiden stepping up compared to other players stepping up that they've had to do all year. And I'll agree, this one felt a little different because they really want this guy to turn out to be this versatile offensive lineman chess piece to prepare you for what you've experienced this year. You know, it happened last year. The offensive line had having health issues. You draft a guy that you think can play guard and tackle on either side of the offensive line, so you have that, I guess, value of versatility to where guys can go down like they have this year and you maybe not skip a beat. I think that he's starting to see that a little bit, and that's why that might be a little more significant to Mike Vrabel than, say, someone like Buster Skrine coming in, you know, from the practice squad and making a play 1 week. Like, this one is a more foreseen thing that they wanted and they've seen from the beginning of the year. And that value of being able to just plug him in when you're experiencing the things the Titans are experiencing right now is huge.
It's interesting, and I agree with that, the Todd Downing discussion here, because, you know, I said it earlier, I thought in the first half it was awful. I thought it was atrocious play calling. Now, you know, in the second half, A.J. Brown gets in groove. You've got to credit Todd Downing for that, to go to the well. You know, Ryan Tannehill, obviously, you know, those two, when they got in rhythm, that's pretty much where you're looking at every passing play, understandably so. Like I said, 16 targets, nobody else on the team finished with more than 3, and that was Nick Westbrook-Ikhina and Jeff Swaim. Julio, one catch on one target, by the way. So
that's efficient.
100%.
One for one. You can't get better than 100%.
One catch for 7 yards for Julio Jones yesterday. But, you know, the Todd Downing part of this, we've had a lot of discussion about him specifically this week here on the show in terms of, all right, the offense largely up until the second half of yesterday's game has been atrocious the last few weeks. They've had a ton of injuries. Obviously, we know that. You know, the offensive line, pass blocking has not been good all season long, they're in the near the bottom of the league in terms of sack percentage. Every measure you want to go by in terms of pass blocking, they're not good. So there are many factors that have led to the offensive struggles that we've seen out of the Titans. I thought it was very encouraging in the second half, particularly with how decisive Tannehill was. And like you said, it's amazing when you get your number one weapon back on the field in the passing game, what the confidence level looks like, how decisive you look as a quarterback, and how much that helps. Vrabel just talked about also helps when he's not on his back every other play as well. So there's a lot that goes into it. I'm just interested, and we said this with Joe earlier, I don't really know what to make of Todd Downing last night just because the first half was so bad, and I felt like the second half was good, getting in a play-calling rhythm with A.J. Brown. And we're all over the map on Todd Downing on the text line this morning as well. It's going to be an interesting kind of finish to the season for him down the stretch.
It is, and I think a lot of it is going to depend on, like, matchups too.
Yep.
And whether or not you turn the damn ball over. I know I have just beaten that dead horse all day, but, like, the Titans have outgained their last several opponents, you know? I mean, I think that's like the Patriots one. You need to go back and look at that. I can't remember if they outgained them in that game.
Well, they
or
ran
not.
For 270 on the ground in that game.
Yeah, and a lot of those big runs, fumbles, end those drives. And the fumbles killed them in that game. The one interception in the red zone killed them in that game. They did not outgain New England, but they're close. I mean, they picked up 355 yards total offense. Like, the Titans' offense has still been able to move the ball. Just the biggest thing is, like, you are killing your team if you are turning the ball over, especially on your side of the field. In the Patriots game, it was you got deflated by a Deontay Foreman run that almost went the distance, but he fumbled the ball on that run. And the Patriots get the ball back, and you bail them out of a possible scoring possession. And then the like other fumbles in that game, too, like we're just at bad parts of the field. And then, of course, in the Steelers game, almost all of your miscues were on your side of the field. Like, that has been just the biggest thing that's kept the Titans' offense from being able to put up points enough at a rate to win you games. Like, there's not finishing drives. And in the first half, too, of the game, they weren't moving the ball at all. And then you had the Deontay Foreman run where it was called back on the face mask. And I just thought, like, this team cannot buy a finished drive here. They absolutely cannot finish a drive, and, like, to save their lives, too. And that's the worst part about it, is that the offense, even with A.J. Brown not being 100% or not having Julio Jones or not having Derrick Henry, will still show some flashes in terms of being able to move the ball, whether it be throwing or running. It's just when you have those turnovers, man, like, that kills you. Or if you're going for a fourth down in opponent's territory and not being able to finish the possession, it kills you. And that's when you're stuck with multiple games, only scoring 13 points and losing.
By the way, congratulations to Bill in Nashville, who won tickets to see War on Drugs coming up at Ryman on Monday, January 24th. Bill, congratulations. Merry
well done,
Christmas.
Bill.
Very well done on our phone line. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Ron texting in, the officials were atrocious. Didn't they see that they got the call wrong on the face mask? That was clearly not by Christian Fulton. He grabbed his shoulder pad. They should have overturned the call and made it right, because that put the Niners at our 25. That was a pretty atrocious face mask call.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, Freudian slip there last night. It's not good stuff. Christian Fulton, I mean, literally grabbed shoulder pad. Was not close with the face mask.
Man, like those, like plays on pass coverages like that, like whether that face mask penalty or pass interference, like the fact that we had an opportunity as a league to be able to review and overturn those. And like, you look at that play and you're like, okay, it didn't take me more than 15 seconds to realize he didn't get his face mask. But we tried this for a year, and officials would look at that for a couple minutes and say, call it too close, call in the field stands. Ruined the chance. The NFL ruined the solution to their own problem.
Yeah. Well, it's just amazing to me, and it's one of those things where it's human error, right? So you're never, as long as officials are around, you're not going to have perfect games, and I understand that's the expectation. You want to see things called as close to perfectly as possible, and I get it. It's the NFL. We've seen some atrocious calls over the year. I don't have to tell you that we've seen some atrocious calls over
this year's been a doozy.
And this year has been a doozy on that regard. So I get it. There's frustration with officiating. You know, to me, there's supposed to be the eye in the sky that kind of helps you with some stuff like this. And it's just amazing how some things are reviewable and some things aren't. Like, if you take a look at that Christian Fulton play last night, all you got to review that for about, I don't know, 3 seconds. And you're like, oh, yeah, that wasn't a face mask, man. Just buzz down. Hey, that's not a face mask. Pick that flag up. Like, it should not be overly complicated. And yet, it is. And it feels like we're having this conversation every week when it comes to officiating.
This is unrelated to video review, but Elijah, I'll ask you this, since you were the only one of the three of us watching the game on TV. Did the announcers acknowledge that the refs had one day in between games, because this crew was on one of the Tuesday games? Did they talk about that or no?
Not that I picked up on.
Okay.
I didn't hear the mention. You saying that is the first I've heard of it. And okay, if that's the case, that's brutal. Yeah.
Well, Jonathan Hutton tweeted that out before the game yesterday, and I understand that the scheduling is probably very rigorous and everybody gets everybody the same amount of times. Like, you don't want to switch a crew around if you don't have to, but I mean, these guys should have more than one day in between games. And I think that they were in the West Coast game too, so they came from LA to Nashville with less than 48 hours in between games. So I mean, that's not really how it should work, right?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, you should be able to make a change under a circumstance like that.
It seems like a recipe for disaster. You know, that might explain our the play in question here that Ron brought up. Is
now,
you know,
I mean,
maybe you're a little punch drunk and you see a hand of the shoulder pad.
Now,
that's a little different.
Now, there were a few plays that they didn't throw a flag on that I was like, oh, I don't know. I mean, there was a, I thought, a pretty clear defensive pass interference against San Francisco on A.J. Brown early in the game. He's face guarding him the whole time. He makes contact before the ball gets there. Like, I thought it should have been pass interference. And then there was a big first down the Titans picked up where A.J. Brown was on a route, and he basically just, like, shoves his guy 13 yards down the field and then breaks open to catch the ball on the sideline. Like, it's probably offensive pass interference. Neither one of those called.
Definitely swallowed the whistle there.
Yeah, but it works out.
A block charge call. Like, yeah. Those things, like, those kill me.
Yeah, I mean, it works out, and look, the Titans win the game, so the Christian Fulton play at the face mask will ultimately not matter all that much, but I would like to get through, like, one NFL weekend in one game and be like, hey, didn't notice the officiating all that much. That's good stuff.
Yeah, like, we haven't had many of those. I mean, there's always, it seems like every day, like, show after a game day, someone's complaining about the officiating.
That's,
you know, there's
like 30% of the text line every Monday.
Yeah, I'll start keeping tabs on that. Like, start keeping like official stats on how many are official hate tweets.
Yeah,
and I think you're probably right. 30% sounds like a good hypothesis for this this experiment here.
Coy in Clarksville texting in. Nick Bosa was salty last night because a rookie shut him down. That rookie may or may not have had some tight end help as well. They didn't leave Dylan Raidens on an island all that much last night, which is probably a good call.
Exactly.
Now, they did a few times, and there were a few plays where he was on an island where he looked pretty good, mm-hmm. and there were some where
he looked like a rookie against Nick Bosa. Yeah. Nick Bosa's going to do that to a lot of offensive linemen, even if you give them tight end help. Nick Bosa's going to do that. I think the Titans were very fortunate enough last night for Nick Bosa not to eat Ryan Tannehill, given the offensive line that was on the field.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get into A.J. Brown's big night coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Play silly underdog picks today. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week for a chance to win tickets to an upcoming sporting event or concert. Go to thegamenashville.com for more details and to play. Silly underdog picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Elijah Campbell, Max Herz here with you on this Christmas Eve morning here in Nashville. Talking Titans, welcoming your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. By the way, Elijah, your New Orleans Saints expected to sign Blake Bortles today.
Ugh.
He's practicing with the team, and it looks like he'll be the backup to Ian Book on Monday night. So what a quarterback situation for the New Orleans Saints this year. Jameis Winston to Trevor Siemian to Taysom Hill, Now Ian Book the starter and Blake Bortles the backup.
Merry Christmas to me, right? Yeah, buddy. Like I get the roller coaster known as Blake Bortles. And like here's the thing.
That's
too,
the Monday night game this week too, right?
It is.
Saints and Dolphins.
2-7-7 teams.
Yeah.
Which props to the Dolphins for winning six straight to get to that point. My man Chase McCabe has him as the number 10 team in the NFL.
Golly.
They're on
does
a roll.
He really?
He does in our top 10 rankings.
Chase.
My man Chase, he's got Tua fever. He
Chase.
Says the Tua Tagovailoa decline has been greatly exaggerated.
I think they were number 21 on my list.
Ooh, off by 11. There's not that. Yeah, that's a lot of variation there. Yeah, I'm not that sold on the Dolphins,
they're
but like,
good.
Oh my God, if they have to face Ian Book, they have to win, right? Like Ian Book's not getting like conducting more than two touchdown drives, right? There's no way.
I wouldn't think so. Quarterback though, you tell me.
Oh, he looked awful in the preseason. I thought he only played a couple preseason games. He didn't get that much preseason action. And my thought process too is if Sean Payton looks at you and looks at Trevor Siemian and says Trevor Siemian is definitely a better option at quarterback.
Probably not good.
It's probably not great because Trevor Siemian was horrific this year. Outside of the second half against the Buccaneers, which apparently all the Saints have to do is play the Buccaneers 17 times a year, and they're the greatest team in the history of the NFL.
Chase just texted me and said, "Hey, Rob, <What's going on?" laughs> appreciate you
on your personal text line."
Personal text line driven by whatevermakesmefatter.com.
Whatever makes me fatter.
AJ Brown, big night last night. 11 catches, 145 yards. And it was interesting. You watch him play, and we read off the stat earlier. The Titans are 8-1 when he plays 60% of the snaps or more with AJ Brown on the field, which is, you know, obviously there's a lot of Derrick Henry in there. There's a lot of Julio Jones in there. Mm-hmm. A much healthier lineup. But still, nonetheless, that's impressive. 8-1 with A.J. Brown playing 60% of the snaps or more. It was good to see him back on the field last night. Now, obviously, the big caveat to this conversation is he's going to have to stay healthy for the remainder of the year. But Rex Road brought up a point earlier that I think is interesting, and I want to get your thoughts on. You know, a big conversation we had last year was, all right, where exactly does A.J. Brown fit in terms of the wide receivers in the NFL? I mean, he's not Devontae Adams. He's not DeAndre Hopkins. I think we all understand that. He's pretty darn good. And, you know, that's been largely forgotten this year because he hadn't been on the field.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the Colts game in Indy, he just torches their secondary. Last night, 11 for 145. The second half in the Buffalo game, he was awesome in that game. Like, last night was a good reminder of, yeah, when this guy's healthy and when he's right, he is a dominant wide receiver in this league, and he's a guy that I think he is fully capable on any given game day of carrying your offense. And right now, quite frankly, that's what they need him to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think a healthy A.J. Brown is a top 10 to 15 receiver in all of the National Football League. And that's like, I think a couple of years ago, I think I might have had him in the top 10, but you know, sometimes availability is your best ability, and it's been a challenge for him this year. It's been a challenge from the last couple of years because even like he's like Joe mentioned it too. Like there's some games last year where he breaks off these amazing plays and he's hobbling back to the sideline, and like there's I don't know how 100 like the closest AJ Brown has been to being 100% healthy in the last 2 years, but it can't be over 90%. You know, like
I mean he was hurt all last year,
and that is kind of what happens to, like, with the style of play that he has. He is one of the best in terms of getting yards after the catch, and that is a very physical type of receiver. You know, he doesn't catch the ball and go out of bounds. He fights for extra yards, and that's what makes him so good too. And you can see now that he's back, like even with all the defensive attention, you know, kind of going towards him too, like at a certain point last night, the Niners had to just know that if the ball is going into the air, it's going to A.J. Brown. That kind of target discrepancy, you know that's going to – it's like that's what's happening here. And he was still able to make plays. And that touchdown, I will go back to it, from Ryan Tannehill to A.J. Brown, I mean, I didn't think it was a bad defensive play by the Niners. I think Brown broke out of his route perfectly, and Ryan Tannehill trusted he would be at that spot at that time and threw it to where only A.J. Brown could get it. And that comes with also the familiarity that those two guys have. So even if A.J. Brown is not 100%, I think him being with Ryan Tannehill helps a lot too because of the established chemistry they have between the two of them.
This was an interesting kind of nugget put out there last night by the NFL Research account. It says A.J. Brown had a career-high 16 targets and 11 receptions for 145 yards and a touchdown. It's Brown's 11th career game with 100-plus receiving yards and at least one touchdown. The only players with more such games since he entered the league in 2019 are Cooper Kupp with 13 and Davante Adams with 12.
And before this year, how many did Cooper Kupp have?
Yeah,
not as many. He did not have a ton.
Come this year.
A good chunk of them have come this year, and he's had an insane year. Yep. I mean, Cooper Kupp kind of took the position where, like, if you had me rank the top 10 receivers in the NFL last year, I probably put A.J. Brown, like, right around 10. And I don't know if I would have had Cooper Kupp there, foolishly. And now I think you swap Cooper Kupp in there because he's just been a machine this year, and it helps what having Matt Stafford compared to Jared Goff will do for you. And
he's got 122 catches for 16, 25, and 14 touchdowns in 14 games.
That's insane. He might break Michael Thomas's receiving record, which, of course, you have the extra game, yada, yada, yada. But Michael Thomas's record could last for 2 years and then Cooper Kupp break it.
Yeah.
This year. That's very, very likely. And he's been insanely consistent too.
But it's not even just that with A.J. Brown in terms of the, you know, the company you're in with that stat. I mean, pretty much throw out any receiver stats you want to throw out there for the most part since he came in 2019. When he's been on the field, like, he's right there with those top guys. Uh-huh. And that's encouraging. Like, there's this idea out there of, oh, the Titans better be careful giving A.J. Brown a long-term deal because he's already had some injury issues early. I understand. The injury issues are concerning. I don't think there's any way around that.
Very much so.
I think last night a pretty good reminder of why it's important for the Titans to lock up A.J. Brown.
Exactly.
He's going to need to be a part of this team as you move forward.
Especially given his age. I mean, he can maybe handle some of this injury stuff now. Like, there's a difference between Julio Jones having this lingering hamstring injury in his 30s and A.J. Brown having some of these different injuries he's had.
He's 24
years old.
In the
first 3 years of his career, he's 24 years old. Like, the time to heal and him still getting his physical prime, which is still might be a year or two away, like, you want him to spend those years with your team the same way Julio Jones did to the Falcons. Not saying A.J. Brown is the caliber receiver Julio Jones was and Julio got in the league, but there's, in terms of production, like, some comparables between, you know, the two of them. And wide receiver in this league, like, it's amazing. Like, look at what the wide receiver position will do to a quarterback. Like, Jared Goff looked a lot better when he had those weapons in Los Angeles compared to what he looks like the first 15 games of the year as a Detroit Lion.
I mean, he's slinging it now, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The man Campbell has unlocked Jared Goff, and I can get into that all day. It also helped
great
add some receiving depth a little bit. And Amon-Ra St. Brown has had a really good back half of the year. But it's amazing what the wide receiver help can do to you in terms of giving you reliable options. And Ryan Tannehill looked a lot more comfortable last night just having A.J. Brown on the field than he has the last several weeks without him, you know? And that has made a huge difference, and Ryan Tannehill looks a lot better because of that. And that, like, the fact that he can make your quarterback play better and elevate his play a little bit is one of the reasons to keep him, especially considering the deal that you have on Ryan Tannehill right now where the cap number is going to go up to $40 million a year, and you have him for a couple more years. It makes sense to keep that chemistry together because it elevates both their play.
Well, big game from A.J. Brown last night. On the flip side, there's Julio Jones. Now, I was surprised that he got on the field to begin with this week because when he left the game with the Steelers game with an injury, I thought to myself, well,
he might go back on IR.
There's no way he's playing on Thursday night for sure. And what do I know? He gets out there and he plays on Thursday night. Now, he finishes with one catch for 7 yards. The catch came really early in the game. That was his only target on the night. And at one point, I tweeted out, like, is he playing? Did he, like, borrow Harry Potter's invisibility cloak? Like, what's going on out there? Where's Julio Jones? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Joe on the show earlier said, you know, he just kind of feels like he doesn't have any explosiveness to him right now. And, you know, I guess my question is moving forward, as he hopefully gets healthier, which is a big if with Julio Jones, mm-hmm. Is there another level that he can get to rather than what we've seen the last couple of weeks? I mean, even the Jacksonville game, when you're coming back, he's been shut down for 4 weeks. He comes back in there against a terrible Jacksonville team. He finishes with 4 catches, 33 yards. Really not much explosion to him then either. Mm-hmm. Like, at this point, I will be surprised if Julio Jones is a big factor coming down the stretch. I'll put it that way.
Well, here's the thing, too, because we talk about the lack of production coming from this hamstring injury, and it's constant, like reoccurring. My thing is, if 10 years ago, does this get better? Probably. But this is year 11 in the league for Julio Jones. He's 32 years old. There's a lot of tread on those tires. Sometimes those injuries don't get better when you're in your 30s, you know? Like, I'd probably feel more confident if it was A.J. Brown having these hamstring issues. It's a little different with someone who has played in his 11th NFL season and has played the amount of games he's had. I mean, last night was game 144.
Yeah.
And Julio Jones' NFL career. It's a lot. That is a lot of mileage there for a wide receiver. And the hamstring injuries, it's like, I'm not a doctor, so obviously I can't guarantee that his hamstring is just not going to get better. But it's less likely to get to the point where he was as explosive as he was in Atlanta. And it turns out what the Titans end up trading for was 20% of the Julio Jones that we saw in his career.
Yeah, and that to me, that's a big problem, because I think it's at some point you're going to need a number two guy. Like, you're going to need a number two wide receiver. Mm-hmm. And I feel like right now the Titans don't have one. I mean, Julio Jones, it's kind of funny to think about it. Like, the argument heading into the season was, all right, who's the Titans' number one? Is it Julio Jones or is it A.J. Brown?
Man.
That's pretty clear at this point.
We had so many of those discussions. Oh, yeah. Just looking back on now, like, the discourse of this offense from late August and early September to now is dramatically different.
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear A.J. Brown's the number one. But, right, like, to me, they don't have a number two right now. Like, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, I think, is a good player, and I think that in the role that he needs to be playing – he's really good at it. To me, he's a 4 or 5 wide receiver at best. He's a great blocker. As we saw last night, he can pick up some big first downs for you. 2 big catches, 38 yards that moved the chains last night for the Titans. There's nothing wrong with Nick Westbrook-Ikhina.
Yeah, he's reliable for what he is, and that's what he should be taken as.
Yeah, he's not a number two guy. So if Julio's not going to be the number two guy, you don't really have one. And quite frankly, you don't really have a guy that's close to that. Like Chester Rogers – again, yeah. He's a good player for what he is. He had one catch
great
for 3
special
yards
teams
last
player.
Night. Right.
I like him as a return man, you know. And like, he had a good return last night that picked up some valuable yards and had an advantageous start to your drive because of where the field position was because of Chester Rogers. But I don't love him as an offensive weapon, you know.
Yeah.
Marcus Johnson I liked a lot more as an offensive weapon.
So when you get into the playoffs, I mean, the easy answer is, well, you just got to hope Derrick Henry's back. And I think there's something to that. I think that's a big part of how successful I think the Titans either will or won't be when playoff time comes around is whether or not 22's back. And not only whether or not he's back, but is he close to what he was before the injury? Like, honestly, I think this idea that if he comes back, you're going to just turn around and hand the ball to him 35 times a game is not realistic coming back this part. Now, next year, hopefully when he's had an off season to heal up, yeah, I think he can get back to that.
Sure.
But, you know, part of that is going to be you've got Derrick Henry coming back in. The other part is, all right, what happens if you're taking on a team in the AFC and they can find a way to take away A.J. Brown? Do you have anything else in the passing game that could step up? If you told me that before the season, I'd be like, yeah, you're going to leave Julio Jones single covered? Have fun with that. But right now, like, Julio Jones, to me, I don't think he scares any a defense right now. Like, with this version of Julio Jones, I know sometimes you get caught up in the name, and the name is what it is. And
the history was what it was.
There's respect. That's fine. I don't think this version of Julio Jones scares anyone right now.
Anyone. No one's going to go in, you know, cat coverage for Julio Jones, or you're just on him the entire game. No one, like, teams will be able to load the box against this Titans team when Derrick Henry comes back. And if you have one really good corner, like the Patriots do right now, then that's a bad matchup. The Titans' offense is now prone to really bad matchups if a team is able to have a decent run defense and one really good corner that you can just stick on A.J. Brown. That is going to make a huge difference. Whereas earlier in the season, like, the whole point of bringing in Julio Jones was that you couldn't just load up the box on 70% of the plays on this team anymore because you had to account for Julio Jones stretching the field. And the fact that you don't have that anymore takes away a big element of your offense. And now Derrick Henry, when he's back, is going to see loaded boxes. Even though he's really good against loaded boxes, it's a more advantageous matchup to not have 8 men in the box. And then if you have a team that's got a really good corner, like the New England Patriots, there's a matchup problem, and even though that Patriots team is not great offensively, they're going to keep themselves in the game because they have an advantage on the defensive side of the ball. I just think they're more prone to those type of matchup problems now that Julio Jones, really, the fear of God he used to strike in the eyes of defensive coordinators just isn't there anymore.
When we come back, we'll be joined by our friend Chris Sanders, forever Titans wide receiver. Get his thoughts on the Titans game last night. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.